Welcome to Unyielded, thriving no matter what. In a world of constant change and challenges, it can seem hard to keep up, no matter how hard we run. Yet we all know those people who seem to handle everything with grace and grit. Seemingly, nothing throws them off their game. They are engaged in what matters most to them, they are achieving the success they desire. In other words, they are creating the life they love to live, no matter what challenges and surprises show up. We call them Unyielded. My name is Bobby Kaler, and I'm your host, and I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be mid-career, or considering your next career. You could be an entrepreneur, a salesperson, or you may be that person who just feels like something else is calling to you, and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us, so that when a surprise shows up and threatens to derail us, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's get right to today's episode. My guest today is a former chef and sommelier who helps food lovers change their relationship with food and alcohol. As a certified life coach, she works one-on-one with her clients to get to the root reasons why they eat more than they need to, so that they can lose their weight in a sustainable way. In our conversation, we talk about things relative to food and alcohol, but also, in general, how do sometimes, you know, our very thoughts and habits sneak up on us to perhaps sabotage us? Her name is Molly Zimmick, and I cannot wait for you to meet her. Molly, thank you for joining me today.
Hi, Bobby. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I am excited for this conversation because it combines two of my favorite things, personal development and food.
Those are two of my favorites also.
There you go. And now you're a classically trained chef, right?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Nice. Tell us a little bit about that.
So I have always been really passionate about food. I grew up in a family with an Italian father, and all of our conversations centered around what we were planning to eat for the day. And so much so that after college and after sort of a stint in graduate school, I decided to abandon my academic background and pursue my love of cooking by enrolling in culinary school in Europe. And it was just one of the best things I ever did. I absolutely loved it. I worked as a chef for 10 years in the restaurant business and then also as a private chef for 6 years, working for individual families in their homes, and continue to really love to cook and to eat. It's just a huge passion of mine.
Wow. That's cool. And so in Europe, that's where you went to school?
Yes, in London.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That must have been amazing.
It was really a dream come true to go to school every day, focusing on learning classical French cuisine, classical French patisserie, observing demonstrations taught by some of London's best chefs, and then also, you know, having the opportunity to recreate those dishes. And I mean, I just brought home so many wonderful desserts night after night. I couldn't eat all of them, but it was just a very delightful experience.
Wow, that's so cool. And now I know being a chef, I know that's hard. My nephew went to a culinary school here in Colorado, and I know it's a tough profession.
It's physically demanding, but it also requires a completely different skill set from what I was used to, because having come from a very academic background, I felt like I sort of had mastered the system of knowing how to succeed in academia, but in a kitchen, those rules don't apply. And so there was a new type of organization that I learned, which some of your listeners might be familiar with, which is called mise en place, which is a French term for everything in its place, but it's basically a way to be organized and systematic, knowing exactly how you want your workflow to go Once I figured that out, things were a lot easier. But in the beginning, it really was very just challenging in so many different ways.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm curious about that because I've heard that term before, and it's when I love to cook, and I'm not a chef, but I love to cook. And I've always been a big believer in everything in its place before you get started. And so what was the big challenge when you were learning that?
You know, in cooking, so much of it comes down to time management. As you can imagine, you need to make things in the appropriate order and understand when something is going into the oven, how long it's going to take, how much lead up before then, and make sure that every ingredient is cooked to the appropriate temperature. But things take a different amount of time. So depending on how long it takes to chop your raw ingredients versus saute them versus allowing, for example, bread to rise, all of that has to be factored in. And so my first couple of days in a professional kitchen, I really floundered because I had a huge list of things to do that needed to be finished within a couple hours, but no idea how to organize each of those projects. And so it took actually guidance from one of the sous chefs and me looking at the way other people were working to figure out, okay, I need to start with gathering my ingredients and figure out how much time that takes. And then I need to work on chopping everything that I need before I start sauteing it. Really just thinking, okay, how long is this going to take? I know I have 2 hours to complete all of it. How am I going to break each of these projects into special chunks of time? And then figure out exactly how to go from there. So it was really a process of just learning, understanding, becoming more skilled in using a knife, understanding how long things take to cook. And once I had that figured out, it became pretty easy. And I'd say that was probably one of the best things I learned being a chef is time management.
Yeah.
How to really be efficient and effective. That's kind of served me in the rest of my life since then.
I was going to say, I think that'd be a skill that would be transferable.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely is. In fact, in my business now, it's very interesting the way that my knowledge of mise en place has applied to the same strategy I use to help people with achieving goals.
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing. You make decisions ahead of time. Mm-hmm. You figure out how to stay committed. And then you simply learn. When things don't go the way you expected, you learn, you readjust, and then you keep going. I mean, it's the exact same philosophy.
Yeah, I can see that. And with that, tell us a little bit, because I know you've made a change. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about what you do now.
So I am a certified life and weight coach for food lovers who want to change their relationship with food and alcohol. A lot of people come to me because they've decided that they really want to lose weight and they've recognized that they're stuck in this habit of overeating or overdrinking. And the reason why I got into this work is because I reached a place in my life after working as a professional chef. I was also a certified sommelier. So that was a big passion of mine too, of really feeling stuck. I felt like my passion for food and wine just was not creating the same level of satisfaction that it had. Plus, I didn't feel physically healthy. I was just really not satisfied with how I felt, how I looked. And I had a lot of, you know, minor health issues as a result. Low on energy, a lot of brain fog, not sort of restless sleep, all of those things. And I had tried a lot of diets in the past that worked temporarily, but I also wasn't willing to give up my love of food. And so I was introduced to life coaching and started to really look at the root reasons why I was eating and drinking more than I actually needed to. And it completely changed my thinking, it completely changed my life. Not only did I lose weight, but I started to really feel empowered around food in a way that I never had before. So it became a passion of mine to help other people with this because I thought this is really a missing piece. This is something that a lot of people just aren't aware of.
Yeah, I can see that. You know, people like to eat. you like food that tastes good. You don't want to sacrifice on that. So what were some of the, I guess, the key things that you learned in that journey that you share with others?
Well, I realized that I was turning to food a lot for emotional reasons. Now, this was, Bobby, this was just brand new information for me because I never thought of myself as an emotional eater. In fact, I never thought of myself as being very emotional in general. I always just thought like I'm pretty even keel. That's how people describe me. I don't have a lot of highs or lows. I just, you know, pretty even tempered. But when I took all of the extra food away and just stuck to following my plan of, you know, eating meals throughout the day and that was it, all of these emotions bubbled to the surface that I had no idea were even there. I was crying more. I was laughing more. It turns out I had been eating so much throughout the day that I was just numbing a lot of the emotional experience that I was feeling. So that was a huge wake-up call for me. I realized, you know, even boredom or anxiety or sometimes even happiness was a reason for me to eat. I think that's very common in our culture and society is using food as a way to entertain ourselves, as a way to de-stress, as a way to just feel better momentarily. But a lot of us aren't aware that that's what's happening. We're actually using it as a way to kind of numb the emotional experience that we're having. So once I sort of learned that food was serving a purpose beyond just fuel, and I also simultaneously figured out how to actually understand my emotions and manage them without eating or drinking, I felt such a huge weight lifted. I mean, it wasn't just the physical weight. It was like this mental weight. I was able to kind of deal with some of the chronic anxiety that I had. I was able to work through disappointment and frustration and some of the other emotions that historically I had just used food to deal with.
Yeah. So when you said in there, becoming aware of how you're using food, you know, because I think, it, you know, you said that you weren't aware of it, and I'm imagining that many people aren't. How do you become aware of
that's
that?
That's a great question. Well, what happens, what I sort of teach people is, okay, in order to, you know, shift your thinking around food and have food be something that primarily is your source of fuel, but can also be something that you enjoy, but you just have to be deliberate in enjoying it and not do it in an unconscious way. You decide ahead of time, okay, when am I going to eat? What are my meals going to be? And then what happens usually is in between those planned eating times, you'll have an urge or you'll have a craving to eat something. That's what happens to most of us, whether it's like 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. You get home and your brain just says, hey, let's go get a glass of wine or let's go find those chips.
Yeah. But chips are my weakness.
Yes, they're mine too.
I love them.
Yeah. And so when that thought comes up, the approach that life coaching takes is to become aware that your brain is suggesting you should eat, but that was not actually part of your plan. So that means that this is an urge. That means this is just an emotional vibration. It's the emotion of desire. And so just becoming aware of that idea that your brain has, like, let's have something to drink or something to eat at 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening is the first step of awareness. Like identifying, okay, I'm having an urge. My brain is saying I really want this, but I know I don't really need it. So the second level of awareness is like, what is it that I really need? Many of us just really need a break. You know, we need some time to relax. We need some time to just kind of quiet our mind to transition into the rest of the day. But we're so used to turning to food or alcohol that we don't figure out other ways to take care of that need.
Yeah.
So what ends up happening is we create a habit that ends up having a lot of consequences that we don't want. Instead of just taking care of the need to relax or to have some space to just unwind in a natural way, which will, you know, long-term really promote well-being so much more than overeating or overdrinking.
Right. That makes perfect sense. Especially, you know, that time of day, you're ready to kind of, like you say, wind down.
Right.
So do you help people like find what to do in those moments instead?
Yes, absolutely. Because the way that I explain it to people is it's not enough. And what we usually do with diets or even with cutting back on drinking is we think, well, I'll just take it away.
Yeah.
I'll cut down to sort of brass tacks and go on a strict diet. And that feels terrible. And most of us fail because we're not really creating any pleasure.
That's right.
For ourselves. It just feels like a huge void. That's the way it felt to me when I started changing my drinking and my eating. It was like, well, this isn't fun. I mean, I don't really want this life, you know? What I teach people is like, while you are, you know, cutting back on the food or cutting back on the alcohol, you also have to simultaneously create a new habit of being creative about new types of self-care, about cultivating pleasure in new areas. So for me, this looks like there are so many different ways to do this. And what I tell people is like, experiment with what feels good to you in the moment and see what really hits the spot. So it might just be going for a walk and listening to a podcast. it might be just lying down and just having some space to just let your mind wander. It might be taking a bath. It might be writing. I mean, writing is a big passion of mine, as you know. So I took a lot of that desire that I had for food and a lot of the extra energy that happened when I stopped over and overeating and over drinking and really kind of funneled it into my writing and really just was very satisfied and fulfilled in a different way. I mean, it's not that same instant pleasure hit that you get from food or alcohol, but it's more of like a steady stream of pleasure. Yeah. That ends up kind of expanding your life instead of limiting it.
That makes a lot of sense. And you said right there about the self-care,
yeah,
different ways for self-care. Do you find that people, they can struggle with that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, anytime you change a habit and you introduce a new one, there's a period, usually of about 90 days, but it just depends, where it feels awkward. It doesn't feel like the norm. And I explain it to my clients as like, this is part of the process. It's not going to feel natural yet. That's okay. You just have to, you know, be patient with yourself. You have to be compassionate. You have to remember why you're doing this. Like, what really is your reason here? And sometimes people, you know, don't have a strong enough reason and then they end up not being able to stay committed. But yeah, it's like in the beginning, it's just knowing and saying, listen, I'm going to try this today and I'm going to just practice it. And just see how I feel and just take it step by step and just be patient with myself. Mm-hmm. Know that, you know, it doesn't need to be perfect. It's not going to be an overnight fix. We're talking about changing a lifetime of overeating or overdrinking. It's going to take a minute to do that, right? It's not going to happen in one day.
Right.
And a lot of my work, Bobby, really is, it's centered on changing your relationship with food and wine, but ultimately the result is changing your relationship with yourself. Connecting deeper to yourself and understanding yourself better. That's at the heart of the emotional work that I described to you.
Yeah.
That's what really happens when you take away things like food or alcohol, you're left with yourself. And instead of being judgmental and criticizing yourself, which so many of us are just very accustomed to doing.
Wired to do.
Yeah, right. Wired. That's the way the brain is wired. The opportunity is there to start to practice compassion and self-love and nurture yourself. And so a lot of the self-care, going through that step of taking care of yourself, is a means towards that end as well.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so a couple of things come to mind there. Mm-hmm. When you said that you're left with yourself when you take away those other things,
yeah.
I had a friend once, this was years and years ago, and she's like, I can't stand it when there's nothing to do and it's just me and myself.
Yes.
Like, it's so uncomfortable. Do you find that with your clients?
In certain cases, yes. I mean, I have some clients that are used to using work as a way, mm-hmm, to distract themselves from time with themselves. And it is a process of practicing being, you know, with the quiet of who you are. It is a process of learning how to enjoy your company. One of the things that I suggest to people who are starting this work and who don't typically have a strong relationship with themselves or don't enjoy being with themselves is thinking about everything that they have right now, everything that's available to them, everything that they can be grateful for. And just even being focused in the present moment and looking around and saying, like, you know, what are all of these things that I have? And kind of cultivating, you know, what coaches describe as like an abundance mindset of, mm-hmm, feeling really full, feeling like they are enough as is, learning to appreciate what they have instead of just looking for everything that's missing or lacking or going wrong. And that really is kind of a first step to getting to this place of liking who you are and enjoying being with yourself and appreciating what you have. But again, it's one of those things that requires first just being courageous enough to give yourself the space to do that. So many of us are scared to even do that, right? It's like, well, mm-hmm, what's it going to be like if I don't have my work happening all the time, or if I don't have the food here? We have fear around kind of stepping into that space. And so part of it is just being courageous enough to be there and to listen, even if it's just for a few minutes. Ask yourself, how do I feel right now? What's really going on here? What do I think? And being prepared to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard. I mean, that can be very hard, especially when you're programmed to do all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know? Right.
So how does that relate to the, when you said practicing the self-care and the self-compassion and self-love, which mm-hmm. I thought, you know, I was curious to learn more about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there, you know, in my experience, there are a lot of clients that I have who start out from a place of self-loathing, mm-hmm. wanting to lose weight because they just dislike themselves.
Oh.
And what I talk to people about is that while you can approach weight loss or any kind of transformation from that place, it is a lot harder. And eventually when you reach your goal, you're going to be stuck with all of those same emotions. It's going to be yeah. hard to sustain it. It's much easier and more effective to figure out how to accept and to love yourself right now. Now, that's a big ask for a lot of people. I mean, when I suggest you need to love your body, most people are like, well, if I loved my body, I wouldn't be doing this. And so it's not as simple as just saying, okay, you just have to love your body. It's like, okay, let's see if we can get to neutral first. Instead of thinking, I love myself, can you just accept what you have? That's really what I encourage people to do. Like, can you just accept, I have a body, or I have two legs that work?
Yeah.
Because from that simple place of, okay, I can believe this about myself, you can kind of open the door to being grateful for some things that you have without going all the way to love.
Right.
If I can just accept where I am and recognize, okay, this body is still going.
Mm-hmm.
I still have a body.
Right.
And identifying that resource helps you see, okay, well, if I have this, how can I take advantage of where I am now and maybe, you know, achieve what I want? And so it's very subtle. It's kind of kind of subtle gradations of accepting yourself, working on just meeting yourself where you are. I mean, with drinking, I talk to people about, instead of just thinking, okay, I need to stop drinking, it's bad, I don't want to do this, start to just recognize like where you are. How is this helping you? Let's just be compassionate and understand this has served a purpose for you. Let's be curious about what that is. And understand yourself from that place. Because when you understand what it's solving, you're going to figure out what you need to do on the other end to try and help yourself without alcohol. That's what self-love is. It's like meeting yourself where you are, understanding yourself a little bit better, and just being committed to continue to listen and understand yourself, even during times when things don't go according to plan. It's not just when things are great and you're eating the way you want to, or you're drinking the way you want to. It's those times when things don't go well, to be compassionate and say like, okay, yeah, this happened, but I'm not going to beat myself up anymore.
Yeah.
That doesn't help any of us.
It doesn't. And kind of what I'm hearing there, God, there's so much I want to explore. The first thing is, it sounds like instead of judging ourselves or the action, which we're so prone to do, to maybe explore with some curiosity. You know, when you said the thing about with drinking, like, well, what has it served for me versus I'm so bad for doing this?
Right.
Another thing, when you were talking, I loved how you said, just getting to neutral. Let's start there. Get to neutral. It triggered for me a memory. This was, oh my gosh, back in 2003, I got really sick and I collapsed and I spent years in bed.
Okay.
And when I was always an athlete, and when you spend years in bed, you know, your muscles kind of atrophy and you're going to gain some weight.
Yes.
And I gained a good 30 pounds or so. And that was like devastating for me. And I remember this was early on in my recovery, you know, when I was able to get out and start walking again, and I was complaining to my doctor. I'm like, oh, I can't believe I gained all this weight, whatever. And she said, and she stopped me and she's like, you know what, Bobby, you might try with starting to be grateful for the fact your body did what it needed to do to stay alive.
Oh, such a good point. Yes.
It just kind of changed, because before then it was like, oh my gosh, you know, is my stomach flat or whatever.
Right.
And from that point on, it was like, yeah, my body stayed alive to give me a chance at the rest of my life.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, and I think that goes when you said, you know, to think of your body as a resource. I think that's what kind of triggered it for me, because it is. It's this amazing resource. How are we taking care of it?
Yes. Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think we're so used to just always looking at things through this lens of it's not enough. It's not enough. Yeah. I'm not doing enough. I'm not good enough. And the brain is just used to that default thinking, that to shift it into, wait, what's going well here, mm-hmm. can just open up a whole different way of thinking.
Yeah.
And really is what you need, because so many of us have this false sense that, okay, beating ourselves up, thinking that we're not good enough might help get us back on track, might punish us enough, but it never works.
It doesn't.
Right. Some of your listeners might be recognizing that, well, you know, I've tried that and it's not actually helped me get where I want to go. Mm-mm. So much of it is just what I tell people is like, just decide today to drop any kind of self-judgment. I know it's hard because we're used to doing it, but even just when you recognize yourself doing that, make a conscious decision to turn it off and to say, you know what? We're not talking to ourselves that way anymore.
Yeah.
Dropping that resistance that you can create between, you know, the self that wants to, you know, either feel bad or turn to food or turn to alcohol or do some of these other things, and the side of you that wants something different, dropping that layer of resistance that comes from the judgment can make things so much easier.
Yeah.
Can make it so much easier to take care of yourself, to want to take care of yourself, and actually to learn more about yourself instead of just judging yourself.
Right. But we do, we're constant. And this, I think, is in all areas, well, maybe not all areas of life, but many areas of life, mm-hmm. where we're like, okay, what's missing? What else could I do? Where could I be better? Versus, mm-hmm. you know, to your point, what's going well?
Right.
You know, and being in that moment.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. This was going back to, I think I was in my late 20s, Molly. It was a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a coach. And I don't know, I was going off on myself about something, okay. something that was, you know, whatever. And she just stopped me and she's like, would you ever talk to anyone else the way you talk to yourself?
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I never would. That'd be mean. And she's like, then why do you do it to yourself?
Right.
For some right. reason though, it feels okay.
Yeah.
To talk to ourselves that way.
Yeah. And I think that's really where the value of life coaching comes in, because we're not used to recognizing that our thinking is optional, or even viewing our thinking from kind of an observer, sort of watcher standpoint, to say, oh, this is what I'm saying to myself. Is that really helpful? Is this how I want to talk to myself? Like giving yeah. ourselves a choice, because yeah, you're right. We're used to just listening to our brain and assuming it's the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But as to your point, if a neighbor from across the street came over and said the exact same things to you, you would say, excuse me? Who do you think you are?
Get off my property.
Right.
That is a great, great little word picture in my head, right? Like we'd yeah. kick someone off out of our house if they did that, but yet we invite that into our own brain, our own yeah. house.
Yeah. But the wonderful thing about awareness is when you first just even realize that you have the option of not entertaining that, it's almost like a switch gets turned on that they can't get turned off. Now those thoughts might still continue to surface, but you've all of a sudden realized, wait, that's optional.
Yeah.
I'm not going to just, you know, that record might be playing in the background, but I'm just not listening to it anymore.
Yeah. And I can choose that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That's a really good word picture for people. So something you said a couple times earlier, I wanted to go back to, if you don't mind, mm-hmm. when you said helping them make decisions early, like early in the day about yeah. what they're going to eat. Can you tell me more about that?
Well, the objective is to, you know, there are different parts of our brain. There's the part, sort of the primitive part of our brain that is used to just being spontaneous in the moment, that's connected to our reward system, that just wants to feel better. And a lot of us who turn to food or who turn to alcohol in the moment to feel better, we're relying on that primitive instinct that's just saying, hey, you know, just go into the kitchen and get a snack. That's going to help you decompress. It's going to help you transition into the rest of the day. But there's this other part of our brain, the prefrontal cortex, the higher brain that's involved in strategic planning, which is what differentiates us from animals, that allows us to come up with these goals, that allows us to think about how we might want to evolve or change as people. Now, that part requires more sort of advanced planning. And so what I tell people is that in order to keep that part of your brain in control and in line with what you want most, which for some people is eating less or losing weight or drinking less, then you need to make decisions ahead of time using that higher part of your brain. And then in the moment when that spontaneous primitive part of your brain pipes up, you just work to acknowledge it, but continue to act from those decisions you made ahead of time. That's really, and this is kind of getting back to what we talked about in the beginning with mise en place. That's at the heart of what mise en place is like you make decisions ahead of time so that you have a plan for yourself and you don't have to think in the moment. You can just go according to that strategic plan, knowing you'll be successful if you follow it. But then this is where life coaching comes in, because it's not like you can completely deny that primitive brain. That primitive brain is there with you. It will be there with you always because it's part of our survival mm-hmm. mechanism. So that's where you figure out, okay, like the primitive brain says, I really want this, but this isn't what I want for myself long-term. So how can I just listen to that and then handle some of these emotions that are coming up and learn how to understand myself better?
Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah.
You know, and it makes a lot of sense. I don't know if it was something I heard or something I read. It was years ago. And they said, when you make your decisions earlier in the day, you're basically reserving your discipline, because then you don't have to wait until you're tired and you're done working to be like, oh, what am I going to do for dinner? Because then are you going to make the best choice? Probably not. But if you decide in the morning, this is what I'm doing, it's already decided. We don't have to worry about it. We're setting ourselves up for success that way.
Yeah, it cuts back on decision fatigue. You don't have to use any energy in the moment figuring out what you're going to do. And when you do respond to that kind of confusion or questioning in the moment, it opens up the door to just making a spontaneous decision, which is the opposite of what you want to do if you're trying to change the way you eat or change the way you drink.
Yeah.
You don't want to be reacting spontaneously, because you'll end up just having something for comfort instead of what you actually need or want long term.
Yeah. So without the intention.
Yeah.
Okay. And now there was an article, I know that you've written several articles, and there was one that really caught my attention, and it was the art of embracing uncertainty.
Yes.
And you wrote, there was something you said in there, it was a few things. One of the things was, uncertainty isn't a problem unless you think it is.
Right.
And I was wondering, can you share a little bit more about what you mean by that?
Yes, absolutely. So many people in this last year, with everything that's been happening with the pandemic and all of the changes going on, have been really struggling with this sense of uncertainty, which is what inspired me to write that article. I have had a number of clients start working with me because they find themselves turning to food or turning to alcohol because they're really trying to make sense of all of these things that are happening outside of them. And what I wanted to describe in this article, which is the same thing that I tell my clients, is that life is always uncertain. Right? We never know what the future holds, but it becomes a problem when we start thinking that it's a problem. Like when we start thinking, oh, I should know, or we get into this kind of what if thinking, well, what if something terrible is going to happen? What if the schools never open? Or what if I'm stuck taking care of my kids day after day? Or what if I never find another job? And we spiral into worry and anxiety, and we create kind of a miserable existence for ourselves right now.
Right.
Instead of just staying centered in the present moment, again, looking around at everything that we have right now. And that the fact is that most of us are pretty well taken care of right now. We have everything that we need, and we can be content in that. And uncertainty, the fact that the future is unknown, doesn't have to be a problem. It just, okay, we don't know what's going to happen, but what we do know is what we have right now. And that's where all of our control is. My idea is that, you know, people get hung up on the fact that things are uncertain and not knowing what's going to happen. But life has never been different than that. And so you can kind of embrace it and just say, okay, the future's unknown. It's always been that way. It's not something to worry about. We could just as easily imagine that things work out perfectly. Most of the time things work out the way they're meant to, and they work out for the best. So instead, let me just shift my awareness to what I have right now.
Yeah.
Knowing that the fact that the future is uncertain is not a problem. It just is.
Yeah. I think in there you quoted Christine Carter, and it was something like, the opposite of uncertainty isn't certainty, it's presence. And that sounds like what you're referring to there.
Yes. So, I mean, the one thing that we can know for sure is everything that's right in front of us right now. That's the only thing that we have control over, right? Is we have control over our thinking in the present moment, of how we handle our feelings, and what's within our reach in any given moment. Everything in the past and everything in the future is outside of our control. But it's so fascinating that so many of us spend all of our mental focus on those two other areas instead of what we have in front of us right now.
Yeah.
So when you feel uncertain, when you're caught in this feeling of uncertainty, the best thing is to always just bring your awareness back to the present moment, to everything that's in front of you right now.
Yeah. Do you find with your clients that that's hard for them or can be challenging?
Oh, for sure. It's not something that we're used to doing. But it is a process of just becoming aware of that being an easy way to feel in control, right? Mm-hmm. It's an easy way to shift from this anxiety and restlessness of what if to, okay, everything is fine right now. And it just, that's really what thought work is all about, Bobby, is just being committed to practicing it, you know, saying, okay, I'm just going to work on this. I'm going to remember, I'm going to try and notice the way that I'm thinking and then shift myself back to the present moment. And the more you do it, the more natural it becomes. But yeah, it is awkward. It can be challenging in the beginning.
Yeah. And I think that you said a key word there, the practice. It mm-hmm. is a practice. To me, it's kind of like a skill, like maybe any other. And it just takes that the commitment and the work and the consistency with it.
Yes. And a willingness to not think that it needs to be perfect.
Yeah.
That's a big stumbling block for people to say, well, I can't get this right. I'm not doing it perfectly. And instead it's like, well, that's, you know, life is not perfect. As humans, we're not perfect. So it's just a willingness to just keep trying. That's at the essence of what commitment is. Just be willing to try, be willing to meet yourself where you are, even during the times when you have setbacks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you're right. The hang up on perfection is, we see it all the time.
Yes.
It really gets in the way. It gets in the way of learning.
It does. Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. So is there anything else that if someone is, you know, thinking about this journey, like they want to change their relationship with food or alcohol, anything else they should know that we haven't covered?
One of the things that I encounter a lot, and this actually mirrors my own journey, is that so often people get stuck in this thinking, it's just not possible for me. Mm-hmm. I've tried so many times, right? Like I've tried diets or I've tried changing my drinking. I just can't do it. And we use past failures as a reason to just give up on ourselves. And so what I would like to just offer is that if people listening are thinking that similar thing, to know that it is fully possible, that just because you haven't figured it out then doesn't mean that it's not possible for you now. And that's really what I learned from my experiences. I was willing to keep trying. Believe me, like when I was in my 40s, I thought, you know what? I'm too old at this point. I love food too much. I'm a sommelier. Like I can't imagine my identity without these things.
Yeah.
But there was part of me, my intuition that was telling me, you know, you deserve more. Your life can be more expansive than this. There's more to your life than these things, and these things are holding you back. And it really took me trusting my intuition. There were several years when I had that intuition that I didn't even act on it because I just thought it's not possible.
Wow.
And it really, it took me just being courageous enough to say, hey, maybe there's another way that I haven't looked at. And that's why I do the work that I do now, is because for me, the thought work was the missing piece that nobody had ever explained to me before.
Yeah.
Wasn't as simple as like just taking out the food you love. And that didn't work. It was like, you need to think about why you're eating this way in the first place. And so I just encourage your listeners to not give up on themselves and to not give up on the idea that it's fully possible that if they have a dream or if they have an aspiration for more, that they can achieve it. They just have to decide.
Yeah. And I a couple things in there, that it is possible. Right? Mm-hmm. Anything is possible. And also you said that we look at our past failures, and I think we do. And yet, why don't we look at our past successes?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're talking there and you're saying, you know, when you're in your 40s, and when I was in my late 40s, my husband, it was right around the time I turned 50, I was having terrible back pain, terrible back pain. And, you know, I'd gained weight and all this kind of stuff. And he said, you know, how about if we cut down on our processed carbs?
Okay.
And he's like, are you willing to try?
Right.
I'm like, well, I'll try it. Cause I wanted to prove him wrong, really and truly. Cause I'm like, I can't imagine giving up bread. But within a week, the back pain went away.
Oh, interesting.
It was amazing, you know, and then, you know, just changing something, what seemed like, oh, we couldn't possibly change that. That's, you know, couldn't be done.
Yeah.
And what it opened up though, is amazing. And that's why when you said, I think people get to a point where they think, well, it's too late. I can't make that. No, it's never too late.
No.
It is never too late to make these kind of changes. I hope that that's a message that people will take away. It's never too late.
I mean, I have people in their 70s and their late 70s who come to me and they achieve success that they've never achieved before after years of being told like it's going to be harder for you, you know, which that's just right. reinforces that old thinking. And yeah. so it really is just like, you're right. It's never too late. Like you have the opportunity right now to decide how you want to use your time. And I think this is what people really need to hear during this season where we feel like there have been so many restrictions put on our lives is there is so much you still have control over.
Yeah.
And so it's about realizing, you know, you can control the way you think, you can manage your time, you can create the life that you want, just taking baby steps today.
Yep. And that is something very, very dear to my heart. You can create the life that you want to live every single day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very cool. So this has been great. A lot of good stuff. I'm so excited. Where can people learn more about you, what you do, and how can they get in touch with you?
So people can go to my website, which is www.mollyzemek.com, where I have all of the information about my business and how I help people. I also have a podcast called Weight Loss for Food Lovers. People can find me there. Yeah, those would be the best two places to look.
Okay, perfect. And I'll put those in the show notes. You also have articles on Medium, but I think you can find those through your website, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
I have a number of articles on Medium, but there's a link on my website that directs to all of those if people are interested in reading some of those pieces.
Perfect. And I recommend that they do because I know I loved that one on uncertainty because I know it was around food, but then I was thinking it really applies in like all areas of our life. So
yeah. Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us. Thanks for sharing your insights. And yeah, I hope people go check out your stuff. And it was a pleasure.
Oh, the pleasure was all mine, Bobby. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. I hope that you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. Here are my three insights for thriving. Number one, when we are feeling stuck, we are often missing a realization about ourselves or about our circumstances. It could be that we may have lost our passion for something that we used to love, or we may not like something about ourselves. Or we might be disappointed with where we are or where we're going. It's at these times when we need an insight, an inspiration, or simply a new way to see things. In other words, we need a new awareness, which we can get by, you know, seeking to cultivate it or by working with a coach who helps us, you know, learn to observe ourselves and our thoughts. It's really all about exploring with curiosity to get a new understanding about ourselves. And this new understanding opens up new possibilities and new choices, which will lead us out of feeling stuck. Number two, and I loved it when Molly said, move to neutral first. When we're in a place of feeling bad about ourselves, it's hard to make lasting transformation because often those feelings, you know, the feelings of feeling bad, they can persist even after we try something new. So Molly's suggestion is to take small steps towards accepting ourselves. And she said, we might start by, you know, moving towards neutral first. So for example, appreciating that we're still alive or that we have a body, you know, and she said, meet yourself where you are and then grow towards love and acceptance. And when you hear that voice in your head, we can notice it and we can hear it. And we might even be curious about it as a way of learning more about ourselves. But importantly, refuse to accept it as truth. And number three, commitment is when we have the willingness to work for something, even when the setbacks happen. And we know this, setbacks are gonna happen. But when we use past failures to justify not trying or to give up, we're allowing a blocker belief to stop us, sometimes before we even start. So instead, when setbacks occur, frame it as, this just means that there's something that I haven't learned yet. Instead of giving up on yourself, learn to disarm the blocker beliefs and make a true commitment. Decide what you really want and then start. It is never too late if you're willing to try and willing to learn. I passionately believe that we can all create the life we want if we make small steps at a time. So those are my three insights to live by. And again, I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. Shifting gears a little bit, we are busy building a course to be ready spring of 2021, and it's called Start Your Future Today. And we are excited to offer it because it brings together our experience over the last 20 plus years in creating the life that we love to live every day. We just want to share what we've learned with others. So if you've ever found yourself saying, I feel stuck or trapped and I don't know how to move forward, or I know what I want to do, but I don't know if it's possible, or, you know, things are pretty good, but how could I get to another level? Then this course is for you. In it, you'll learn things like how to describe the future that you want that is both inspiring and motivating to you, how to start moving towards that exciting future, and also, if you like, you can submit your story to me after you go through the course, and then I can give you feedback and ideas for potential next steps. This course will help you start your future today. Why wait? It's our future. It is our story. Let's start writing it. So you'll learn an approach and skills to write and live towards that next chapter of your life story. And here's where things are exciting. For a limited time, we are giving away scholarships to this course, to the, you know, Start Your Future Today course. So here's how you can enter to win a scholarship. There are four steps, but they're easy. Number one, subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. Two, leave a review for the podcast. Three, take a screenshot of your review. And then four, simply email your screenshot to hello@unyielded.net with the subject Start Program. We'll select five lucky winners over the next month to receive a scholarship for the course. Just want to say thanks so much for tuning in to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What, where we are committed to sharing ideas and stories that will help us all live our lives our way.